I want to tell you about my grandfather, Robert Finter. My grandfather was a stickler for hand washing. I think, okay, some of you are applauding that. Here, just wait. I actually think he was just a good old-fashioned germaphobe in general. That's what he was. And as happens with grandparents, many times when my cousins and I would be at their house, we had outdoor activities. We were out working in his shop, or we were going fishing, or playing in the dirt, or doing a project that involved getting our hands all over a bunch of old tools. And so it inevitably followed that we would come inside, and we knew the instruction that we were going to hear when we came in. Maybe it was time to eat afterwards. He would give us the command. Now, he was like many from this part of the country in his age. He stuck an extra R in the word, and so we would hear this throughout the house. Wash up. He was consistent. It was Washington, D.C. I mean, it was any of those words. That's what you got. Wash up. It was predictable. It was probably sanitary. And it was annoying. So it was, to our great delight, one day we discovered something. Some of my cousins and I were in the guest bathroom. We were cleaning up. And you know how in many houses, if you're in one room where there's plumbing, you can hear the plumbing in another room. And so we sat and listened. I'm not proud of this moment, but we did. And we heard first, he was in the bathroom, we heard the toilet flush. So we knew what plumbing sound should be next. But the next sound we heard was the door opening. And we looked at each other like we had just discovered buried treasure. We high-fived and we ran in there. Pawpaw, we caught you. You didn't wash your hands. And he kind of smirked, and he knew he'd been caught, and he muttered something about his hands being so dirty from what we'd done that he had to wash them first. I don't buy it. Maybe he did. It doesn't matter. We had him. And it's still a story we tell to this day. Hand washing, sanitary practices, cleanliness, purity, it's an easy area to be inconsistent about. Whether it's small things like a grandfather and his hand-washing practices, whether it's people who talk about health practices for others and then we find out behind the scenes they're not following those when they have their private gatherings. It's easy to be inconsistent about cleanliness and purity. And that's where we find Jesus today in Luke chapter 11. You might join me in the last part of that chapter in a moment. So far in this chapter, Jesus has taught his disciples how to pray. And he has told them the importance of asking boldly from God. Then he has to defend himself against accusations that he's demon-possessed and gets onto the crowd for asking for a sign. And he tells them that the eye is the lamp of light into their body. Several teachings there in a row. One of those teachings gets the attention of a Pharisee in the crowd. And this is where we pick up our story. Luke tells us in verse 37 that when Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. Now, we're not sure why Jesus received this invitation. Is this a Pharisee who maybe wants to seem elite? And maybe wants to curry favor with his friends by inviting this intriguing speaker back for a VIP reception, private Q&A. Maybe it's someone with pure motives, like others we see in Scripture, who are quietly interested in what Jesus is saying, but are not yet ready to ask in public, so need a safer space to ask some of those questions. Maybe it's a guy who's upset with Jesus and wants to chew him out privately. It's funny how many commentators assume good faith motives in this Pharisee when they talk about why this dinner would have happened, but we've all been around enough to know there's multiple motives for why he would want Jesus in his home. So now we get to find out, what is Jesus going to be like as a guest in this setting? Is he going to work the room, shaking hands, tell jokes? Well, he gets off to a rocky start. Luke tells us that the Pharisee was surprised when he noticed that Jesus did not first wash before the meal. I mean, wouldn't you be surprised? What kind of guest is Jesus here? He seems like the kind who walks in and doesn't wipe his feet, goes over to your refrigerator and grabs something without asking, plops down on your couch, grabs the remote, and finds his favorite program. From this story, Jesus is not the kind of guy you want to take with you down to Al Bernays for a nice meal. But he knows what he's doing. He's not disregarding etiquette just to be rude or careless. He's making a point, because this isn't about hygiene. It's about ritual purity. Because the Pharisees, they had developed sort of a ritual washing practice before their meals. And when Jesus sits down without doing that, it's not bad manners. He's making a statement. And he continues now. Jesus is speaking to those gathered, and he says, "Now then, you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you're full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor, and everything will be clean for you." Now, I don't know at this point if everyone's still milling around waiting for the first course, but either way, Jesus seems to launch in before the meal even begins. And he tells them very clearly, you are focused on the wrong things. You keep appearances neat, but the inside is rotten. You make sure your plates are clean for a nice slab of meat, but you won't turn and give a bite of that meat to a hungry person. You want your glasses nice and shiny like the dishwasher commercials, but you won't give a cup of water to someone in need. So Jesus is telling them that the cup might look clean on the table, but no one should drink from it. At this point, I'm guessing the host might be regretting his invitation. He's looking around nervously at his friends, wondering what kind of cleanup he's going to have to do. You know how it feels when you've kind of convened a gathering and now you feel responsible for how it goes? Jesus, though, he's just getting started. There's no pass the potatoes, please, about to happen. Jesus, I'm sure, looks at the host's amazed face. He sees the negative reaction, maybe the discomfort, and he launches into this blistering set of woes. Listen to these three things Jesus says to the Pharisees who are gathered for this dinner. "Woe to you, Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. Woe to you, Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you, because you are like unmarked graves, which people walk over without knowing it." Three woes, all about contamination and purity and law-keeping. He says to them, you tithe, but you neglect justice. You climb over each other to get the best seats in the public places. And you are contaminating society, and these people don't even know it. Jesus here is telling the religious elite that they are the problem. Not the godless, not the tax collectors, not the sinners. And if you were here last week, just note the contrast. Jesus last week was in the home of a sinner. He was in the wrong room, and he was making everyone comfortable. In today's story, Jesus is in the home of the religious elite. He's in the right room, and he's making everyone uncomfortable. And he's not done yet. Now there's a law teacher also in the crowd, and he chimes in. He says, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us also." He's saying, like, you're firing a shotgun, and some of the spray is hitting us. And Jesus, well, his response is not to refine his aim at the Pharisees. He turns the barrel right at the teacher of the law. "Oh, you don't like what I'm saying? Well, why don't you get a load of this? How about three woes for you and your law teacher friends? You burden people with heavy laws and you don't help them out. You love and honor all the prophets of the past because they didn't require anything of you. But you kill present day prophets because they come with a cost. You know nothings have kept everyone else from gaining knowledge." In this meal, Jesus has broken every rule, and he has launched a full-scale attack on the people who just showed up for a polite dinner with an interesting teacher. The gall of this guy. In a single dinner conversation, he has accused the most respected religious leaders in Israel of hypocrisy, pride, injustice, and spiritual sabotage. That is not exactly the kind of thing you say if you're trying to keep the dinner pleasant. In this story, we have a group of people gathered around a table for a meal and charges of hypocrisy flying all over the place. Any chance that might sound like your family's Thanksgiving meals? Maybe when politics come up, or maybe it's the conversations grown children sometimes have with their parents about faith and church, or maybe it sounds like the arguments we see and hear every day on cable news and on podcasts and social media. Everyone is accusing everyone else of hypocrisy. And that's why these discussions never seem to get anywhere. Oh, you got upset about that issue? Well, where were you 2 years ago when it was on your side? Oh, suddenly you care about integrity. Oh, so we're going to be worried about that principle today. Good to know. And pretty quickly, the conversation stops being about the issue and it starts being about who is the biggest hypocrite. Now you might hear that and say, well, that's what Jesus is doing. He's calling the religious leaders the biggest hypocrites. Maybe. He certainly isn't pleased with them. But rewind to this key line that Jesus said. Verse 42, "You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone." Now, the former things, as a reminder, that was tithing, the careful obedience to the law. The latter things were justice, making things right for others. Jesus is not saying to them, stop tithing and feed the poor instead. He's not saying, quit worrying about holiness and focus only on justice instead. He's saying, do both. He's saying holiness versus justice is a false choice. And you can't just pick one and harangue people about it while not doing the other yourself. Hypocrisy is not eliminated by choosing the right side of the argument. Hypocrisy happens when we demand from others what we quietly excuse in ourselves. The ideal takeaway from this story is that we eliminate our hypocrisy. And I'm here today to tell you that that is a worthy, Christ-focused goal. I'm also here today with a realistic take, which is that I'm not sure any of us will ever be fully free of hypocrisy and inconsistency. Should we reduce it? Yes. Should we aim to eliminate it completely? Of course. But I think alongside that, maybe a worthy goal we can aim for is honesty. I think a lot of people would show more grace toward hypocrisy or inconsistency if we'd just name it in ourselves. I want you to imagine Jesus saying to the Pharisees, "Woe to you, you give God a tenth of all your things, but you neglect justice and the love of God." Imagine if one of the Pharisees had spoken up and said this instead. "Fair point. Justice matters to God. I've spent a lot of time worrying about tithing my herbs. Maybe I haven't thought enough about justice. That's something I need to work on." I think that dinner might have gone differently. What if we could talk with that amount of self-awareness about our own inconsistencies? What if followers of Jesus could learn to say things like this? "I care about that moral issue, but there are other areas of my life where I still fall short. I believe in Jesus, and I'm trying to follow him, but I still have questions about my faith sometimes, and I don't have everything figured out. The church has made mistakes, some serious ones, but I've seen also the church do incredible good in the world, and I'm not ready to walk away from it. In this or that election, I had to pick what I thought was the best option, but I agree that this behavior or that policy is always wrong, and I'll never defend it. I care deeply about injustice, and I may not have spoken up about every injustice in the way I should have, but it doesn't mean that this thing isn't important. I'm trying to teach my kids patience and kindness, and I still lose my temper sometimes. I think followers of Jesus should be generous, and I also know that there are times when I hold on to more than I should. Prayer matters to me, but there are weeks when I barely make time for it." Now notice what's happening in these statements. They're not pretending that inconsistencies don't exist. They're just refusing to let inconsistencies become an excuse for ignoring the truth. The opposite of hypocrisy is not perfection. The opposite of hypocrisy is honesty about the gap between what I believe and how I live. And that gap exists in each one of us. Our culture is so polarized right now that even a small acknowledgement of that gap in ourself feels dangerous. People are afraid that if they admit one mistake, that they have to give away everything. That if they admit one area of inconsistency, everyone on their team feels betrayed, and everyone on the other team feels like they've won. And we are in a moment where owning and destroying opponents has become the goal, and no one wants to give their opponents an opportunity to own or destroy them. And so we don't name our own gaps. But followers of Jesus, we're the people who are free to tell the truth about ourselves always and not try to preserve our image or protect something we built about ourselves. When our identity is tied to winning an argument, then we'll never give an inch. But when our identity is rooted in Jesus, we are free to tell the truth about ourselves. So maybe the next time you find yourself in one of those table conversations, maybe it's Thanksgiving when politics come up, maybe it's talking to someone who is disenchanted with church and wonders why you would still bother, maybe it's just any time you're in a room or online and everyone's accusing each other of hypocrisy, maybe in those moments, You can remember this dinner from Luke chapter 11. Because you got all these accusations flying around, and Jesus isn't keeping score the way we would. He's not interested in winning an argument. He is inviting these people to something deeper. Luke finishes the story by telling us that the Pharisees began to oppose him fiercely because of this. This is the choice that we're invited into from this story. When we're in a room with Jesus and he shows us an area of our life where there's a gap between what we believe and how we live, will we respond with defensiveness, with refusing to give an inch, with sticking up for ourselves and pretending like there's no gap? Or will we take the path of grace, admitting that like every other human being, like every other follower of Jesus, we have areas of hypocrisy and inconsistency? And will we in that moment be honest about it and invite Jesus to keep working on us? That's our question from this meal with Jesus. Let's stand and sing.